Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time. The more we learn about catastrophic brain injury, the more we realize that there is more hope than we used to think, that recovery, while not guaranteed, is possible in cases that used to be considered, well, impossible or highly improbable. So why is it that hospitals haven't caught on to the new research and the new knowledge about brain injury? Joining us to talk about brain injury patients and hospitals, Bobby Schindler. He's president of the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network, and he's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, When Hospitals Refuse to Allow Time for Brain Injured Patients to Heal. Bobby, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Well, thanks. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You compare and contrast two cases of young men who suffered brain injury. Tell us those cases, beginning with Brendan Flynn.
Sure. Brendan Flynn, back in 2002, 18 years old, he was involved in a fatal car accident where his friend at the time, was killed instantly, and he was airlifted to a hospital where eventually, within a short period of time, the doctors didn't believe that Brendan was not going to make any type of significant recovery and recommended or suggested to his mom, who was a nurse, to essentially put him in a room and let him die. And that's Brendan's words. And his mom refused, said, you're going to do everything you can to try and help my son. I can't make that decision in such a quick period of time. So they continued to treat Brendan, and it wasn't too long thereafter he started making some progress. And to make a long story short, several months later, Brendan was alert, conscious, in rehabilitation. And today, he's self-sustaining. He's actually been married now 10 years and has four beautiful children. Brendan is actually a speaker. He goes out and he speaks about what happened to him and how lucky he was to have an advocate like his mom that decided to get him the care that he needed rather than listen to the doctors and allow him to die, as they put it.
Contrast that with the more recent case of Brandon Fuller.
Brendan Fuller was also in a car accident, 26 years old, and he was airlifted to a hospital in North Dakota, and almost the same circumstances. Now, according to the medical conditions, and I didn't have all the medical conditions of Brendan, but Brendan was declared brain dead, and his mother was also told that he would make no significant recovery due to his brain injury, and his mom, just like Brendan's mom, asked for more time, said she was not willing to make a decision to end his life so quickly, which the doctors were pressuring her to do at the time. This was within a week of his accident, and she just simply wanted more time. The hospital refused to grant her more time, and within 2 weeks of Brandon's car accident, he was dead. As a result of, they were going to remove his ventilator, but he died prior to that because they were not treating his erratic blood pressure, which eventually led to his death.
So what have we learned about traumatic brain injury that would suggest that hospitals should, in almost all cases, give that patient at least the opportunity of time to heal?
Well, that was the purpose of the article. I wanted to contrast these two stories because more and more I wanted to underscore what we're seeing now for the past 15 years advocating for patients that do sustain brain injuries. We're seeing more and more this quick rush to judgment by doctors, by clinicians, by ethics committees, even insurance companies, to stop treatment and pressure the family into ending their loved ones' lives. And it's become troubling for us, particularly as you mentioned, with the research that's available today, where we're going in two opposite directions. We're seeing more and more promise with brain recovery and the brain's capability of healing itself, and at the same time, we're moving in a much quicker way to end the lives of people who have brain injuries without giving them the chance to see if, in fact, they can respond to treatment and recover from their brain injury.
You mentioned that the American Academy of Neurology published new guidelines that said, essentially, we need to give these patients a chance.
Right, which is just what I'm referring to here. And the American Academy of Neurology, they are a secular organization, obviously. And they are also troubled by this rush, this what I term as an irresponsible rush to judgment, and in the quick manner that, and this isn't, I don't want to paint a broad brush here, but we're seeing more and more this quick rush to judgment, not to give the time that many of these researchers feel is necessary, and now the Academy, the American Academy of Neurology, feels is necessary before we decide that we're going to take steps to stop treatment. We were just involved in a case in Michigan. Bobby Reyes made national news in the same circumstances. Within a week's time, they informed the parents, this was the University of Michigan Hospital, C.S. Lewis in Ann Arbor, that moved to remove Bobby's ventilator within days of his, he had an asthma attack, which led to a cardiac arrest against the parents' wishes. They wanted more time. They were not ready to make that decision. You have to understand, families are already traumatized by the situation. And now they're being pressured and told by the doctors they're going to end their loved one's life within a short period of time, and they're not afforded the time that they're asking.
So the doctors, the hospitals, and the insurance companies, what is their mindset, as far as you can tell, Bobby, that says, look, it's just easier to give up on these people?
Well, it's resources, it seems to me. And there's also, there's another fact. I mean, there's naturally, there's dynamics that all kind of worked into why these decisions are being made. I think there's much of the focus should be on the brain death diagnosis and the organ donation program. I think that might be driving, or it seems to me that's driving some of these decisions because of such the high demand for organs today. But I think when hospitals look at the long-term care possibly of a patient and the cost to take care of that person or the insurance cost, where they can end a life in just a few days under this diagnosis of brain death, it's going to save the facility potentially a lot of money to end a life shorter rather than to be in a situation where they have to offer long-term care for that patient.
Is that diagnosis of brain death medically significant? Is that something that has its roots in genuine evidence-based medicine?
Brain death is a very controversial diagnosis. It has been for many, many years. And if you look at all the literature and all the medical analysis, if you will, of brain death, the doctors are very concerned with its diagnosis and really the consequences of that diagnosis. Although brain death has been around for many, many years, and there is a protocol that should be used at the hospitals to come to that conclusion, it seems to me to make that diagnosis within hours or a few days without really giving the brain the chance to see if, in fact, it can improve, can be irresponsible, and particularly a decision that can never be changed, obviously, if you move to end that person's life. So it's we must always give, I think, the patient the benefit of the doubt. I go out of my way on our website to list stories of recoveries, I call them, and there are dozens and dozens and dozens of patients who have been diagnosed as being brain dead, diagnosed as never having a chance at recovery, that have defied the odds, have proven doctors wrong time and time again. So I think we have to be very careful moving forward before we diagnose somebody in this condition and therefore ending their life without really giving them the opportunity to see if, in fact, they can respond to treatment and recover.
And you mentioned a moment ago both organ donation and procurement. In a nutshell, what do you think might be at work in that process?
Well, the enormous amount of money that's involved here. The organ donation program, and this is my understanding, it's a $20 billion a year industry. So there is a lot of money at stake here. And as I mentioned earlier, there is a high demand for organs that does not meet the supply, or the supply does not meet the demand. So when you have those two factors, the money that's involved and the huge demand for organs, you can see how it could be corrupted and decisions could be made quickly to get at the patient's organs. We've been involved in the past 3 weeks in four cases, Arizona, Texas, North Dakota, and Michigan, all brain death cases. every one of these cases, all four of them, and we've been involved in many more than this. I'm just pointing out these last four. Every one of these four cases that have come into our organization have two things in common. One is the rush to end the patient's life within days of the injury. And the other thing in common is all the families were approached by organizations asking the family to donate the organs of the loved ones once they decide they're going to end their life.
Finally then, Bobby, what's the best advice you could give to family members who have a loved one that suffers traumatic brain injury in the hospital? The doctors are saying, it's over, let's give up. What would you say to that family?
Well, we need strong, and the one thing I always try to recommend is the strong advocates. We need strong advocates for loved ones, and we need to, look, there are wonderful doctors out there, obviously, that will do everything they can to help patients. But at the same time, I think it would be wise, if we're ever in these types of situations where these diagnoses are made so quickly, to ask for second opinions, to ask for more time before we're rushed into making a decision that can never be changed. So people need to know their rights as surrogates, and they need strong advocates to step in and really fight for their loved one if, in fact, they don't believe or agree necessarily with what the doctors are recommending. And I think every surrogate has a right to ask for more treatment, and they should be afforded that right, particularly when these decisions are made in such a short period of time.
Bobby Schindler is president of the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network, author of the recent column for The Federalist titled When Hospitals Refuse to Allow Time for Brain-Injured Patients to Heal. You can read it and learn more about the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Bobby, thanks.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll be looking forward to the Feast of James of Jerusalem with Pastor David Peterson.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.